Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Dan Christensen.
This is take three for this episode,
I think. Well, yeah.
So this week we're going to start with the sad saga of creating episode 27. After an update to Windows 10, we ran into a slight problem where my original microphone was no longer playing nice.
Well, yes, no longer Windows 10 compliant.
Yeah, and try as I might, I couldn't get it to work, so I ended up getting a new microphone. So if you're noticing a change in our audio quality, we have moved from a Samsung condenser mic to a Snowball.
Ta-da.
Now, the next couple of days after I did that, we tried recording the podcast again. Well, it recorded, but I was in a crunch to get things done. So to try and get the episode done somewhat on time, I had attempted to upload it to my OneDrive so I could do the editing on my lunch break at work.
So you're saying you had a cloud burst?
I did, because I did something wrong. I think I closed something down before the transfer had been complete, and so not all the files transferred, and I couldn't remerge them later. So, yeah, we would have had the... It would have not sounded like anything coherent. So,
as opposed to our regular podcast.
Right. So, basically, I corrupted the file. Well, I'm not going to make that mistake again. Basically, I just said, you know what? Let's just skip that week.
Let's just call it a wash.
Yeah. I ended up getting an article out. The articles have started on the site again.
Excellent.
Did my season-end review of Gotham. And the next one, I'm going to do my season-end review of The Flash. Just to get those done. I don't know. There's no show... We'll see what comes out on the new season. Normally, what I do with my reviews is if a new show comes out and it's interesting, yay or nay, I'll watch like 5 episodes, review based on those first 5 episodes, and then do a follow-up review after the season's done and see what the progression was. And I've been doing that for a few years now. Last year was I started with Gotham and Flash, but then I took the hiatus. So I figured at least get those done before the second season premieres.
Exactly.
So Gotham's done. I'll be writing Flash for next week. And then we're going to be into October. So October, I always do as a theme month around horror. So there'll be some reviews of horror-based properties, but I think we're going to have a horror focus on the podcast as well.
Excellent. Is this like when I did my Halloween advent calendar last year?
Similar. Okay. So I know that one of the podcasts in October, you're probably going to get the week off because Jill wants to appear on a podcast again.
I yield to the queen.
Yeah. And she's going to be doing things in about mid-October. They're going to be worth talking about on the podcast. I'm not going to give them away right now because spoilers. But yeah, probably late October, Jill will come back on. I have some ideas what I'd like to do for the other podcast. We may have to have a movie day.
Okay.
With some of my friends. I have a particular series of offbeat horror movies I'd like to review.
Offbeat horror movies. So we're talking like Tremors here?
No, that would be very much more straightforward.
Oh.
Well, this is not really a spoiler because I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I'd like to review Santo movies.
Santo movies.
So, Santo, the Mexican wrestler, the masked Mexican wrestler.
I didn't think you meant the guy that lives up north that brings
That's
gifts.
Santa.
Oh, right.
No, Santo, in the 60s and 70s, Santo, who was a cultural institution in Mexico, did a whole slew of movies that were really popular, and most of them were actually horror-based. He was mostly fighting monsters. He did a ton against Dracula, werewolves, La Llorona, you name it. And so you've got a lot of basically horror-based monsters versus Mexican wrestler movies. And so what I'd like to do is...
Congratulations. I had not heard that one before. And
I have seen some of them because I have a friend, Tony Case, who owns a lot of them rare. I mean, we're probably going to have to go to his house to watch them because these are his precious babies because they can't be replaced. Scarecrow would probably happily buy them off of him if they don't already have it.
Yes.
Well. So that might happen in October. So,
so Lucha Libre versus Monster.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually might be able to convince my wife to come to that one. So.
Yeah. So we're gonna try and get something together and figure, have you there so it's not just me. To, you know, you and I can discuss the movie.
Sure.
Because I threatened to do this once with Don't Read the Latin, and Jen said no. Jen said that'll be a great episode of Fanboy News Network. I've taken that as a challenge. So, on with what shenanigans are going on. So, we're kind of in a weird space because we talked about a lot of stuff last time we got together, and the recording died, so we probably should recover some of that ground.
Well, the big news, at least for me, is you had a weekend of Dragon Con, mm-hmm. and was it PAX?
PAX
happened, and Dragon Con happened. Nothing out of sorts seems to have come out from Penny Arcade, which is a nice way of saying...
I'm sure... Somebody sat down with Mike Krahulik and went, okay, Mike, just don't say anything.
Either that or they have him kidnapped in the woods somewhere, in which case you can let him go now.
Well, he himself, in interviews, has recognized that the stuff he says is a problem for the Penny Arcade brand. And that he did state the last time he put his foot in his mouth that he wanted to actively avoid doing that in the future. And, you know, it's, right now let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he's... possibly working with somebody to make sure he doesn't make those guffaws anymore.
I was going to say, it's great that he's taken that first great step of realizing that what he says is damaging to the Penny Arcade brand. The next step will be to lop off the second half of that sentence and realize that what he's saying has ramifications.
You know what? At this point, we don't know. I mean, we don't know him. I almost met him once. That doesn't count. So now, Dragon Con, something did happen at Dragon Con, but not at the convention.
Yeah.
There was an attendee at the convention who did sexually assault another attendee. The difference, of course, is that Dragon Con gave their full support in helping out, providing all information to the police.
Well done, Dragon Con.
Yeah, doing everything, being a good citizen.
Yes.
Doing what we would hope a convention would do.
Yes.
So that was great. You know, Burning Man happened during this too. And it's, you know, it's alternate culture. I wouldn't say geek culture, although a lot of people that are part of geek culture go.
I'm going to say, I've said it before, I've said it again. I grew up in the desert. I love the desert. I love the alternative subculture that some of that flourishes in. The two together... I cannot think of 74,999 other people that I like, let alone that I want to be in the desert with for a week.
I wouldn't do well in the environment. Just the heat. I don't do well with heat.
Yeah.
But, you know, it happened. It's the thing is, it's kind of that weird hipster thing. I hate to say it, but it's the, you know, Burning Man used to be cool and it's not anymore is what you hear from some people. I mean, part of it is like San Diego Comic-Con. It is beyond its own culture now. It has mainstream consciousness. And you have people going to it who weren't part of the original culture. And there's feelings that people may have subsumed it.
There is that, but at the same time, there are always waves of participation in any sort of culture. Mm-hmm. You can look at geek culture, you can look at Burning Man, you can look at some of the pagan festivals that we used to be involved with. There are going to be successive waves of people. And if a culture can adapt to it and reach out to those people, you can bring it in and make it part of the greater thing. If there's this large dichotomy, a.k.a. gatekeepers, a.k.a. people who want to keep all these other people out, I mean... All I was going to do was just say that they're the hipsters because they went into the desert before it was cool.
True. True.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fair statement. The only thing I think really interesting came out of that is there was a commercial. I don't even remember what brand it was for because I didn't actually watch the commercial, but I know somebody did. I think it was Quiznos, now that I think about it. It was some sandwich shop. That did a commercial riffing on Burning Man that was supposedly a takedown of how it's evolved. And the only thing I've heard about that is Burning Man is considering suing.
You know, all I have to say is of all the sandwich Of all the sandwiches that have, sandwich shops that have been in the news lately, I think that's the least of their concerns. Because,
yeah, well, yeah. You know. So, yeah, that's, so those things happen. That, you know, overall, pretty cool. From the recent events that have occurred, we have not seen problematic issues coming from the convention itself.
Yeah.
Now, we've got Rose City coming up. Actually, Rose City will have already happened when this episode goes up.
It will have just finished.
Yeah, because it's happening, like, tomorrow. Or, it's a two-day con.
It's a two-day, so just Saturday, Sunday.
Although that does remind me, a couple days after this episode goes up is when tickets for Emerald City Comic Con go on sale. Now, that's one I want to pay attention to because of my current model I've done about the growth of conventions and their buyout rates.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to pay attention to is how quickly Emerald City sells out. I want to focus right now on the 4 and 3 day passes.
Of course.
1 day passes usually have a little bit longer shelf life, but how quickly the, you know, the 4 and 3 days and the VIPs.
Well, the VIPs are going to evaporate. I mean, they haven't even announced more than one or two celebrities at this point. And I can say with authority that the fast passes are going to go. Because they, I mean, standing in line is part of convention and all that. And yet to be able to get to the front of the line, hell yes, I'll pay that much money if I can.
All right. So we'll see what happens. So next episode, I'm sure we'll be covering that. So now let's go on to some of the things that I want to rehash from the last time we tried to record.
Okay.
And the big news that happened that we had covered that got lost was about the restructuring at Marvel Studios.
Oh, yes. The where what's-his-name no longer has to report to the bad guy.
That's an interesting way to look at it. So, yeah, Kevin Feige no longer has to report to Ike Perlmutter. So, just a quick recap for people who maybe aren't sure who all of our players are. Ike Perlmutter is a businessman. He ran a company called Toy Biz back in the day. And Toy Biz had toy lines based on Marvel characters. And Marvel, at the time, was going through bankruptcy. And Ike came in, did a leveraged buyout of Marvel, and brought it out of bankruptcy, started Marvel Studios, and ultimately orchestrated the sale to Disney. So, you know, Ike Perlmutter saved Marvel Comics.
He saved Marvel Comics, and in certain ways, the man's a very astute businessman.
On the other hand, he's also apparently a horrible person to work with. He's controlling, he micromanages, he's apparently extremely sexist. And he's just generally not pleasant to get along with. And for the last few years, apparently Kevin Feige has been chafing under the yoke of Perlmutter. Perlmutter is apparently the person, based on memos that have come out, that put the kibosh on Black Widow toys.
Yeah, because girls don't buy action figures. Right.
And he actually had a memo that got leaked as part of the Sony leak that he wrote to Sony about the Spider-Man movies, and in it he said, and it's very clear, female-led superhero movies don't sell. So there's a good chance he's the reason we also haven't seen a Black Widow movie yet.
And why we're getting, what, one Captain Marvel, and there's another woman-led...
Well, you've got Agent Carter on TV.
True.
And in November you have the Jessica Jones series coming on Netflix as the next in the line that includes Daredevil. So that's, you know, sure, you've got those. But so Feige managed to arrange it that he now reports directly to Alan Horn, head of Walt Disney Studios.
Wow.
So Perlmutter is completely out of that loop. Now, Perlmutter is still in charge of Marvel Comics overall. He's in charge of all the TV and animated properties and all of the toys. So it's not like he's out, although some people are speculating this might be stage one of trying to show him the door. But that's going to be complicated by the fact that in the deal that had Disney acquire Marvel, Perlmutter became Disney's largest shareholder.
Problem.
So, well, difficulty. I think people have to remember that just because you're the largest shareholder, there are still ways to deal with you.
See also what happened with Dragon Con the last couple of years.
Yeah. So, There's also the thought that some of the stories that are coming out might be spin from the various sides.
Of course.
That, you know, there are good things that came from Perlmutter. There was also the idea that the Marvel had a creative committee that all the scripts had to go through that included people like Joe Quesada, Brian Michael Bendis, Tom Brevoort, who is editor-in-chief at Marvel. Basically, and I think Jeff Loeb was involved. He is the guy who manages all of Marvel's TV. So they would have to read the scripts, go over things, provide notes, and there's kind of back and forth whether or not they were a good thing or not.
Well, it's one thing, just because they don't have to provide notes doesn't mean they don't probably won't still provide notes.
But they things don't have to wait on them anymore.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of thought about, well, what's this going to mean? Does this mean that Feige could possibly now greenlight movies that wouldn't have gotten that before? It's honestly too hard to tell because we're still waiting on Captain America Civil War, which was produced still under Perlmutter. Doctor Strange will be the first movie done without him.
Well, I guess the advantage to from 2 weeks until now is that we're still in the wait and see category. So yeah. we're not missing out on any up to date news. It's still just kind of hide and watch, wait and see.
Yeah. Now, the other, I guess, fairly big thing going on is you still have the push going on for the DC side of the camp with Batman versus Superman. And the news coming out, and this I currently take as rumor, but the rumor has it that the execs at Warner Brothers saw the movie and their note was more Batman, less Superman.
Interesting.
Part of it is apparently everyone really likes Ben Affleck's performance as Batman. Well, this doesn't surprise me because Ben Affleck is a huge comic book fan, has a really good understanding of the character. And this, I don't think is, everyone always goes, well, he was Daredevil. Yeah, he wasn't necessarily the problem with Daredevil.
Well, it's coming from, he is a bit of a geek. He does have the love of the source material so that he can bring that to it.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, honestly, right now, the plans for the new Batman movie series they want to launch, which is going to be tied in with their collective universe, Affleck's going to direct.
Ah.
And if we have learned anything over the last few years, the best person to direct Ben Affleck is Ben Affleck. Oscars tend to get involved.
Well, there is that.
So, you know, I have no, you know, Affleck, he's like, was hot leading man, then he became a joke, and now he's come around back to respected again. It's almost the Robert Downey Jr. arc, but without drugs and alcohol.
Exactly.
So, there's that going on, but I guess people are concerned because it's the execs, oh, well, we want the grim and dark, and Superman's too silly, and we don't want to, we want to downplay that because Batman is what's going to sell this movie.
Yes, because staying latched onto grim and dark, and maybe some dark and grim to mix it up a little bit. I'm sorry. I'm still kind of looking forward to see what happens with Suicide Squad.
Yeah, although Suicide Squad, again, it's one of the, let's face it, they pick Suicide Squad. That's already a grim book. And often considered part of the Batman universe because a lot of the villains are Batman villains.
I was going to say, that's why it's Harley Quinn.
Yeah, and most of the other villains.
Jared Leto and...
Well, because you've got in that Killer Croc and Deadshot, who are also Batman villains. Hmm. And Captain Boomerang is a Flash villain, but he fits the theme. And plus, in the comics, he was always a part of the squad. And my cat's now chiming in on that, too. Wow. Apparently, Sam is a big Captain Boomerang fan.
Who knew?
Yeah, it's got potential. But again, it's that everything's oppressively grim and dark. And I know we go on and on about this, but I would like to see something come from DC that's better. And they obviously can do that. Look at the TV shows, which most are coming from the same production group. The only current DC TV show not produced by the same people is Gotham.
Yeah.
And that's Brian Heller. That's Batman anyway. You've got right now, obviously, Arrow has been on for a few years. Flash was a big hit last season. And there's great positive buzz on Supergirl. And of those, the only one that has Grimm in its DNA of the three is Arrow. Flash is a very hopeful series, and Supergirl, it's Supergirl. It's going to be bright. It's going to be energetic. Although I read an interesting thing this week, because DC has its movie franchises and its TV franchises. And unlike Marvel, where everything's connected and it's all part of one universe, DC wants to keep them separate. And Diane Nelson, president of DC Entertainment, was asked about this week.
Okay.
And her answer is, she wants to keep those separate to give the maximum amount of creativity to each, so that the TV doesn't feel obligated to the movies and vice versa.
Well, it'll be an interesting compare and contrast, because, I mean, if they are specifically trying to give free rein to let them evolve as they will, and Marvel is, I mean, it's beautiful and it's wonderful to see all the different crossovers, but at the same time, sooner or later, that's going to become a pair of golden handcuffs.
So, yeah, no, I mean, good point. And it's, well, it used to be that DC, we only want one version of the character at the time. Part of the reason they had a very successful syndicated show of Superboy. They got canceled because they decided they wanted to do the Lois and Clark series. There's like, we only want one version of Superman at a time. Other shows like, well, no, you can't do this TV show, or can't use this character on the TV show because they're for the movies only. And that's kind of becoming less, because the Justice League movies are going to have a different version of the Flash than is appearing on the TV show. But no one has said anything about any risk of the Flash being canceled because of that. They just will have two alternate versions of the character. And they're setting that up on Flash, the TV show, this season anyway, because they're introducing the multiverse.
Well, and this is where my eyes start to roll into the back of my head a little bit, because I'm sorry. I like the idea of the story. I still chafe under the Calvin Ballwith comics sort of idea of, we have to create all these different universes and all these different possibilities. Just tell the story.
Oh, you want to talk about Calvin Ballwith comics?
Oh, please.
We can talk. This is another thing we actually had discussed before in the Lost episode. Superman. We're going into comics now. So, back a few years ago, you had the reboot of the DC Universe, the New 52.
Right.
And in that reboot, generally it was a very poorly done reboot, but I've gone over that ad nauseum. We're not going to worry about that right now.
I was going to say, I think everybody has, yes.
So with Superman, you had, when the New 52 launched, you know, Superman had only been around for 5 years. It was a brand new Superman who had never had any romantic entanglements with Lois Lane whatsoever.
Right. Go ahead.
And they had gone to the point of having Lois had a boyfriend, completely unrelated to anything. And they were just making it very clear that while Clark was kind of interested in her, she had no interest in him. Now, this is after having come off a good decade in the previous continuity where Lois and Clark had been married.
Yeah.
And so part of it was, again, the comic creators have this weird thing of, they don't like their heroes married, because a lot of them are honestly hack writers who don't know how to write a healthy relationship.
And because they've never had one. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so
that's me being bitter.
Spider-Man's marriage got retconned away because the writers felt it chafed them. And you got writers who think marriage is the end of the story, not the next stage of it.
Let me run with that one for just a quick second here.
All right.
Let us.
And for the record, Daniel and I are both married men.
Yes. Now.
Yeah.
I spent my entire 20s and my 30s being other than married. But what the thing that just crossed my mind is, this continuing theme of marriage seeing as the end of the superhero, marriage seeing as the ball and chain, the marriage is, doesn't this speak to the larger issue of perhaps maybe this is real life of the writers creeping in? This is, but it's at the same time, it's setting everybody else up to fail because they are creating the culture, the pop culture ideas that lead to that, that form how we look at our relationships. I'm sorry.
A fair point. Yeah, yeah. That's a fair point because, well, actually, I was sort of discussing this last weekend with a bunch of my friends,
mm-hmm.
and one of them said that one of the problems is the target market for DC Comics is 35-year-old unmarried men.
Yeah, well.
And
the parenthetical in that is living in their parents' basement? Well, or...
okay, because DC, we'll get back to Superman in a minute, but this is almost part of it. DC Comics is currently showing a projection of a $2 million shortfall in their projected income this year. That they're $2 million in the negative, that they are $2 million behind what their projections say they should be.
So they overguessed.
Well, what happened was they didn't correctly anticipate how the move from New York City to Burbank during this year was going to affect the bottom line. And they probably overestimated how well the special event they had during that 2-month period while transition were going on was going to sell. So, yeah. And one of the things is Dan DiDio, one of the co-publishers of DC, said that he wanted to get away from what he called batgirling, which was, you know, being more experimental with the books, trying to bring in a wider audience and get to what he called meat and potato comics. Now, to be fair, batgirling could also be called, well, let's do what Marvel's doing to increase their market share and see if it works for us.
Yeah.
And right now, Marvel's has a 10% higher market share than DC.
Well, they've been eating DC's lunch for a while.
Yeah, but this is a huge gap now. And the thing is, it's not that Marvel's market share is going up that much, but DC is losing market share to the smaller indies.
Yeah.
And
that just so happen to be doing the creative stuff that they say that they don't want to do.
Yeah. And also the books that are doing the creative stuff, Batgirl's one of them, and Batgirl's one of their top sellers.
Yeah.
It just, again, it's the, you know, they have in their mind who the comic reader is.
Yeah.
And it's you and I 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I'm gonna tap dance around this because you said that you were concerned about it. But I'm seeing parallels between other national newsworthy items where you have one group of people who are trying to be broad and diverse and open up to all sorts of possibilities and new creative ways of doing things, and you have another group on the opposite, perceived as being on the opposite side, that are just, we're going to do this one thing, and if that doesn't work, we're going to double down and do it even more. And if that doesn't work, we're obviously not doing it hard enough, so we're going to do it even more. And
well, that's actually a proven psychological. I obviously understand what you're alluding to, but they show that if you have any group with a deeply held belief, when it's challenged, the instinct isn't to rethink but to double down.
Yeah,
and that could be what's going on with DC easily. But so what part of their proposal, part of the 2-month special event was showing old continuities and telling stories in those old continuities. And one of them was to give a final happy ending story for the previous version of Superman and Lois Lane.
Okay.
Well, they've got a new book coming out. So New 52 launched about 3 years ago.
Wow. Okay, yes.
And the gap, and then the idea was, okay, when it launched, superheroes had been around for 5 years. So, point being, add those two together, you have 8 years.
Right.
So, they've got a new story, a new comic book coming out called Superman, Lois and Clark. And the premise is, when the universe rebooted, somehow the old version of Lois and Clark didn't get altered. They just found themselves on the new Earth with their old memories. Right. But with a new Superman running around who was part of this new world. So they moved to the West Coast, had a kid, and have been living far away from Metropolis. and try, you know, Clark will sometimes help out very surreptitiously.
So they did The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think part of the idea is that when he does act as Superman, he makes sure people think it's the other Superman. But part of the premise of the story is that they've just been going by Lois and Clark. Because, you know, who are Lois and Clark? No problem. Except that in the current Superman story, Superman's identity has been revealed to the public.
Sorry.
And it was revealed by Lois Lane. So this has been the big story. Lois Lane outed Clark Kent as Superman. And yet you got these people, I don't remember if they're living in California or Oregon, but these people were, wait a minute, Lois Lane and Clark Kent, aren't those our neighbors? There's a thought of, okay, so it sounds like DC is trying to have, you know, being able to eat their cake and have it too, which is the correct original version of that catchphrase.
Yes, well.
But anyway, it's this odd way of dealing with, kind of saying, okay, you guys who wanted this, here it is. But that was the idea, is they were telling their writers, you know, go for it, be experimental. And now they're like, maybe not so much. They just this week canceled about 6 titles.
Good heavens.
And some of their more experimental books, including they canceled 2 of their digital comics. And this has people a little in the uproar, because for the digital space, these were fairly successful books. They were bringing in about $10,000 and $15,000 a month, respectively.
Which is nothing to shake a stick at.
But apparently, you know, that would be low for a regular comic. But digital, you don't have the printing costs.
I was going to say, you don't have printing and distribution. So.
But one of them was Sensation Comics, which was a Wonder Woman comic not tied to the current continuity. So it was sort of a, you know, best version of Wonder Woman. And people were really enjoying. The other was Batman 66, which was a Batman comic set in the continuity of the Adam West series.
Oh, Lord, I can smell the polyester from here.
Oh, it was the art. I mean, they went out of their way to make the art very evocative of, I mean, the costumes looked like they did in the show. The artist was doing an excellent job of capturing the facial features of the actors who had starred in the series. So you could pretty well tell that, yep, that was the Adam West Batman. That was the Cesar Romero Joker. And so it was a fun trip down nostalgia. But yeah, it's being canceled along with other books. And it's just being looked at, okay, so DC's, you know, they are bringing out some new stuff, but they're canceling and they're getting very conservative.
Yeah. I do have to mention, just as an aside, I remember a couple years ago when I was working with Emerald City Comic Con, I was running the line for Adam West and Burt Ward when they came through. And my favorite memory of that was seeing these two guys standing in line right next to each other. And they were standing in line next to each other for a good hour waiting for the time to take pictures. And you had the one guy was the classic Adam West blue polyester Batman. And standing right next to him was the Dark Knight. It was, I mean, you couldn't compare it and contrast it anymore. And they were both sitting there just kind of, you know.
And I want to compliment you on giving me the perfect segue into the next subject.
I live to serve.
So speaking of the $2 million shortfall.
Oh, yes.
So DC is hoping to make that up. Now, the thing they're hoping on is a series that's going to be coming out soon. You're familiar with Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller.
Sure.
So in the 80s, it was one of the 3 comic books that ushered in the idea that comics could be a more adult medium, that it wasn't just kid stuff.
Okay, I'm going to say, okay, what are the other 2?
Watchmen and Sandman.
Okay, I can believe that.
So, and, you know, also was coming out at the same time as Crisis on Infinite Earths and Secret Wars. That's a were all big sellers, but for the, you know, the big sellers that were big sellers, but also were looked upon as elevating comics to another form of art. Those were the 3 titles.
Okay. I would respectfully toss in Art Spiegelman's Mouse, but That's getting off the subject.
Yeah, I the only reason I would go Art Spiegelman's Mouse is its own thing is it was more of an indie.
True.
It certainly was art. I'm not going to argue at all about that. I'm just, the thing with the three I mentioned was they were all mainstream comics.
True. I agree. Sorry for the tangent.
So, in the years since that came out, Frank Miller's writing and output has taken a turn. Basically, the theory a lot of people have posted, and I think it's based on what he's written, it makes sense. Frank Miller, a dedicated New Yorker, has not been the same since 9/11. That he may be actually suffering from a form of PTSD.
Well,
and
ours is not to diagnose. I'm sorry, but yes, yeah. I understand where you're going.
Now, since then, he's put out a few books that have led to some people questioning some of his artistic choices. For the purpose of what we're going to discuss, we're just going to focus on Batman.
Okay.
So the first thing he put out was a sequel series called The Dark Knight Strikes Again. And it wasn't too bad, but it did suffer a little bit from what had become his stock and trade by that time, which is horrors, 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 as we like to say. The next thing he put, and it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great. It was one of those,
yeah.
That it was sort of like, well, we still have the original series. The next thing he put out was DC wanted to do a continuity-free series of books called the All-Star line. Two All-Star books came out. All-Star Superman and All-Star Batman and Robin.
Go figure.
A lot of people think that the Wonder Woman book, Sensation Comics, was what they originally wanted to do for All-Star Wonder Woman. All-Star Superman is a phenomenal series, and I highly recommend anyone who is got a real interest in Superman, go out and find it. It was written by Grant Morrison. It is the best love letter to Superman ever.
Really?
And may, in fact, be one of the finest Superman stories ever written.
Wow. Okay.
All-Star Batman and Robin, on the other hand, is Frank Miller writing Batman, and it's essentially it's got the sensibilities of Dark Knight Returns, but it's like if Batman Year One was done in the style of Dark Knight Returns.
Wasn't that the one that was the origin of the I'm the goddamn Batman?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. And it's honestly where the idea that Frank Miller writes all women as whores got solidified. There's some just amazingly bizarre things that were done in it. And then the third thing that happened was Frank wanted to write a story about Batman versus terrorists called Batman Holy Terror.
There
were two problems.
Only two?
Yeah. One, there was already a comic book called Batman Holy Terror. Two, DC went, no. No, that story is way out there, Frank. You don't get to do it. So he did release a book called Holy Terror with a thinly veiled pastiche of Batman.
Kind of like Never Say Never Again with James Bond. Okay.
And it's clear that he has no idea about, it's a jumbled mess. I didn't even read it, but I watched a review of it. And it's just,
was there a vein popping in the guy's skull?
Just about.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so what DC is counting on is that Frank Miller has written yet another sequel to Dark Knight Returns. And they're going to be putting it out. And it's a direct sequel to a direct line again from the original Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns again? Returns back?
The concern is we don't know anything about the plot. All we currently know is the title. Are you ready?
I'm sitting down.
Are you braced?
I'm braced.
Dark Knight, The Master Race.
There is not a face nor a palm big enough. We know nothing about the story.
We know nothing about the story.
Other than it touches on every bad racist. It pushes every button in. There's a vein popping.
There are already. I know a lot of people that are referring to it right now as Batman: The Final Solution. So, I mean, they're already going there. Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we don't know. I'm assuming the theory is it's Batman versus fascists, I would guess, but it's hard to say. But this is what DC is counting on to make up the $2 million.
If we take up a collection and give them $2 million, do you think we could just bury this thing?
No, because they would just go, yay, more money.
Yeah.
So that's just the kind of where we sit. So, yeah, I don't know, because the problem is Frank Miller, yeah, he still has a place in, he did some great work.
He's done some incredible work.
I mean, I still love, somewhere I have original copies of the Wolverine miniseries that codified the character and, you know, his great run on Daredevil and, you know, even the early Sin City stuff, even though problematic, is still an interesting take on the noir genre.
Well, and it's not exactly as if that's not free of whores.
Right. But one person once said, Frank Miller started writing Sin City and never actually stopped.
Well, there's that.
So, you know, we will have to see. Now, over on the Marvel side, Marvel is just finishing up Secret Wars, which is named for the 80s series, but is essentially it's sort of their Flashpoint. It's their soft reboot of the universe. The difference being they've apparently been planning this for years, laying the seed for it for a long time, and been taking a long time to tell the stories. And so they're about to launch the new titles based on it. And one thing I've heard from many people reviewing Secret Wars, and I don't get it yet because I read all my comics on Marvel Unlimited, so I have to wait 6 months. But what I've been hearing is, especially the reviewers I respect the most, Miles Stoke and Rachel Edidin of Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men, they said Secret Wars is far better than it has any right to be.
Well then.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that the whole premise should not work, but such care in crafting it has been put into it that it does. And that it makes people very hopeful for where Marvel's going to be going with the storyline. The biggest concern right now is we're going to come back around to Ike Perlmutter for a second. Ike is, even though he made many of the sales himself, with the success of Marvel Studios, he's very bitter about any movie company that owns rights to Marvel's characters that isn't Marvel. In particular, he's very upset with Fox for not just giving back all the properties.
And continuing to turn out
bad movies.
Movies.
Well, but here's the thing. Bad Fantastic Four movies. But not so bad X-Men movies.
True. True, true.
I really enjoyed Days of Future Past.
I enjoyed it too, although having to say, comparing and contrasting that Quicksilver versus the Quicksilver in Age of Ultron.
But they weren't bad movies, is the point. They were decent movies.
Yes.
So, but Perlmutter is got a big thing against Fox for having control of those and not working with Marvel. Sony, they get a buy, they made a deal, and things are great. So, in the new continuity, one of the things that happened was, you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
And the Inhumans.
Yes.
And you know about the Terrigen Mist.
Right.
That causes the transformation of people who have the Inhuman genes into Inhumans.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. So, the Terrigen Mist, something happened in the comics a long time ago that released a huge cloud of Terrigen Mist on the world that has just been slowly making its way around. It's actually the origin of Miss Marvel. She's actually an Inhuman.
Okay.
And what is being revealed is that apparently the Terrigen Mist is not only giving latent Inhumans their powers, but is apparently poisonous to mutants. And those that it's not killing, it's sterilizing.
Okay.
In other words, the mutant line is being kind of downplayed and segregated, although there's like 5 X-Men books coming out. So, but people are thinking right now, oh, this storyline is going to be getting rid of the mutants because, yeah, screw them, because we don't have the movie rights. But I would counter with this, and again, this is not my original idea. I have already just name-checked Rachel Edgerton. If you aren't listening to Rachel and Miles... Yes, this is a podcast plugging into their podcast. If you're not listening to Rachel and Miles explain the X-Men and you have any interest in X-Men whatsoever, go listen to the series. Rachel pointed out that comic books thrive on adversity.
Of course.
And none more so than the X-Men, who are never so good as when their back is against the wall.
Of course.
And this is not the first mutant extinction level event that has occurred in the Marvel Universe.
It's not even the first one that I can think of, and I don't even read that many X-Men.
Yeah. So, you know, what she's saying is a lot of people are going, oh, this is a strike against Fox because of the movies. And she's like, or it's the beginning of a storyline that could lead to some good storytelling. Yes, it's rising up the Inhumans, who they want to raise their profile because a movie's coming out and they're on S.H.I.E.L.D. That doesn't necessarily mean they're getting rid of the X-Men. They're just rising the Inhumans and creating a possible conflict between the two camps.
Good.
So, anyway, that's just, and that's sort of the, take. The only thing that is driving everyone nuts, and we don't know how this is happening in storyline yet, but everyone is waiting. I think we mentioned this before. So, in the wake of Secret Wars, there's going to be several Avengers-related books. They're playing a lot of the idea that Avengers are a big enough organization now, they have squads.
Of course.
And there is going to be a new squad. I don't even remember who all is on this particular team, but one member on this Avengers squad does tend to stand out. Hmm. Not the least because he's about 300 feet tall.
Galacticus.
Galactus.
Oh.
Galactus is going to be an Avenger. I know I've mentioned this before because the thing with they have a whole picture of who all the new Avengers are, and there's just a picture of Galactus, and just so he can be in frame with the rest of them, it's only his head.
Still.
And the thing I'm looking at is, okay, what are you doing with the story? Because we have several characters in the Marvel Universe whose secret origin is, and then Galactus gave them superpowers. And these tend to be cosmic-level characters. Silver Surfer, Fire Lord, there's a character... there was a character called Nova before. But there was a character who was called Nova. Who they all got their powers, and these are characters that can survive in space. These are characters that have the power cosmic and can do many powerful things and take on whole teams. Who the source of their power was Galactus. Who, when you deal with Galactus, you need every superhero on Earth, and you need to be clever. So. He's now going to be, I have to assume he's being depowered somehow.
He's going to be depowered, and what is it? They've already demoted demigods of, like, Thor and Odin to they're just really advanced aliens. So
Yeah. Maybe
this is just going to be a really advanced alien that...
Well, I mean, he was already a really advanced alien. Believe me, I am nerd enough, I could go chapter and verse on Galactus' origin, but I won't, because I... Your eyes have had rolled enough tonight.
They're going to stick if we do it again.
So I think on that note, it's a good time to say, you got something you want to say?
If you're wrapping up, I have a question for you, and I'm going to answer it my own self.
Okay.
What's the most recent sci-fi book you've read?
I was going to say written. You know what we're not talking about I've written yet. Most recent sci-fi book I read?
Yeah.
Are we talking straight sci-fi, or does fantasy count?
Sure. Something that your listeners would be interested in hearing.
Well, I'm currently reading Shepherd's Crown by Terry Pratchett. That's my current read. My previous read was Prudence by Gail Carriger.
Okay.
And I'm working my way through her finishing. Those are steampunk books,
mm-hmm.
Although supernatural elements. So, I mean, those are what I've read recently.
Cool. Speaking for my own self, I actually just finished Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson, which is like... hard sci-fi to the point where your head hurts sometimes when he breaks down the science for you. Finished that one 2 days ago, and I'm picking up from the library tomorrow The Martian, the weird book that's coming out. That is out, and the movie of which is coming out shortly.
And that's very hard science.
Oh, yes.
That's very Neil deGrasse Tyson approves science.
Yes. I am a glutton for punishment.
I am looking forward to that movie. It sounds really interesting. So, all right. Well, with that, thank you very much for listening, everyone. If you want to drop Daniel and I a line, you can visit www.fanboynewsnetwork.com and leave us a note in the comments section. With that, barring any other recording disasters, we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, y'all. Have a good one.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.